just go to any last minute questions or any final questions on any of the presentations or any material that was not presented on. Do you have any final questions? And Darrell, I am unmuting you now.
I guess my interest is when and where are you going to post the presentations? Because I couldn't take notes on the slides and they were a good set.
Yeah, thank you for that question, Darrell. We will be posting the presentations. The slides themselves will be posting them on our website. And then our intent then is to, after all the workshops are finished, then we would likely post them on a State Board YouTube channel. And we will provide a link to that channel on our program website at the Water Board site. So okay. both the presentations will be posted, the PowerPoint presentations as well as the audio and video will also be posted. We hope to get that done next week.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. And then any other questions for us? I'm looking through. I don't see anybody's hand raised. There we go. Lisa has a question. Lisa, we should be able to hear you now. Lisa, you're unmuted, so perhaps your mic is turned off. Oh, we hear you a little bit. There you go.
Can someone confirm I'm off of mute?
Yes, there you go, Lisa. I can hear you now. Thank you.
All right, so this is Lisa Hunt from American Rivers. So I was going to ask a question after the first. I think my sound quality is not good. Okay, great.
Yeah, you're cutting in and out.
So
go ahead.
So I was going to ask a question after one of the first presentations on nitrates, but I was having trouble raising my hand. So my question is about the nitrate application limits or nitrogen application limits. I'm wondering in attachment A in the findings, it realization guidelines, and there's a table of recommended application rates. So in most cases, the application limits are actually higher than the maximum shown in those recommended application rates, and I'm wondering about the reason for that.
Okay, so just so we can understand your question, you're talking about the fertilizer application rate.
Chris, I can't hear you.
Oh, yeah, and you were cutting in and out. Shanta, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
All right.
And I can hear Lisa in bits and pieces.
Bits and pieces, yeah. So, Lisa, I think you're having an issue with your audio. I'll try here. So, I think what you're asking is, we have fertilizer application limits, you know, such as for the six crops, and then in addition to that, then we also have nitrogen discharge limits, which is basically the applied minus the removed limits. And I think you're asking about why are those different from each other? Is that the nature of your question?
So Chris, this is Elaine. If I can
interject. No.
Okay, good, go ahead.
Can you hear me okay now?
Yes, go ahead. And then Elaine, maybe after Lisa.
My question is about the recommended fertilizer app.
Lost you.
Yeah, we lost you again, Lisa.
Okay. Oh, sorry. I don't know if it's my connection, but I'm just catching bits and pieces of what people are saying as well. But I'll try my question again.
Yeah, fast.
So my question was regarding the in attachment A, table AC. Okay. Attachment A, table AC12, recommended fertilizer application rates from UC Davis. Those rates are lower in most cases than the application limits proposed in the order. And I'm wondering why the application limits are higher than the recommended application rates for those crops.
Okay, I'll take a stab at that, and maybe Monica might need to jump in and supplement.
I can't hear anything.
You know, Diane, before we begin, Lisa, may I suggest that if we can't get the audio to work here, maybe you could email the question to that Ag NOI address that we provided at the very front. And that's the same address that the comments are coming in, just in case we lose you.
Sure.
Thank you. Go ahead, Diane.
Okay, Lisa, is this any better? Are
okay.
You picking? Yep, okay. So that particular table is an illustration of information that
yes.
was provided.
Loud and clear.
Great. That table is an indication of information that we considered as we were coming up with what seemed to be the most reasonable fertilizer application limits given what we know about our region and typical recharge rates, et cetera. The numbers that we came up with, yes, it's true, ours are a little bit more generous than what was determined in that because we have factored in other information as well. And Monica, I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
Hi, Lisa, can you hear me?
Yes.
So the numbers that are we using as limits are based on grower reported data, and they are higher than the recommended because the intention is to make sure the folks that over apply extreme amounts don't continue doing so. So in other words, the limits are intended to make sure we don't have what we call them outliers, but really is extremely high applications that are definitely not needed. Did you see it? Did you hear it, Lisa?
I did hear, thank you. I don't want to take up time now, but I am wondering what other factors are considered for why the application limits should be higher than the recommended application rates for those crops.
It's just based on growers' reported data, and that's why they are higher. But again, the goal is to make sure the extreme applications are no longer occurring.
Right. It's a combination of what we synthesized was the grower provided information in the total nitrogen applied reports that we've already received over time, as well as information from the FREP program at CDFA. And then scientific literature that addresses what seems to be crop-based needs.
Okay, thank you.
Chris, I see your hand now and I'm about to unmute you, thank you. Chris Beal.
Hi, thank you so much for your time and the presentation. I was wondering if someone could talk through some of the nuts and bolts of the riparian and operational setbacks, please.
Paula, maybe you could help her out with that.
I'm sorry, you cut out on me. Could you repeat the question?
Oh, I did, sorry. I was hoping somebody could describe some of the nuts and bolts of the riparian and operational setbacks?
Do you mean the exact numeric limits?
Yeah, because I mean, we talked about it in a general way, but it might be helpful for people to understand more specifically what we're talking about.
Sure. So I would refer them to page 78 of the order. That's tables C.5-1 through C.5-3, which breaks out the setback, minimum setback width and vegetative cover requirements based on the Strahler stream order or based on wetland area acreage. And so for instance, a stream Strahler order 2, the requirement is to have a 50-foot setback with grasses and shrubs. And as you move up or down, actually, the stream, the watershed, a stream order 6, which is like the Salinas River, then it's a 250-foot setback with diverse grasses, shrubs, and trees. There's also a slope adjustment because we recognize that with slope comes greater velocities, so the setback needs to be a little bit wider. And then the final table sets out the compliance, both interim and final compliance deadlines for the four riparian priority areas.
Chris, did that answer some of your question or provide enough detail of what you're looking for?
That was helpful. I just thought it would be helpful for context for people to understand specifically what's being proposed.
Sure.
And I would also add, it's really important to understand that there are three other compliance pathways available to growers. So the on-farm riparian setback is just one of four ways that they can comply with the order.
Right. Thank you.
And let's see, Jane Subi, I'm going to unmute you now. You should be able to talk now, Jane.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Jane.
This is all very interesting, but I haven't heard anybody yet describe the compost correction factor, which is a really unique element in this proposed order, and I think people would love to hear about it.
Thank you, Jane.
Yeah, so Jane, yes. That particular factor associated with compost, the compost, nitrogen applied via compost is part of the various ways that nitrogen can be applied. So when a grower is required to report their nitrogen applied to their ranch or to their crop, fertilizer application is one way. Via compost is another, and via the concentration of nitrogen in their irrigation water is one more. And with respect to the compost is, the requirement is for that compost to be the finished product. It shouldn't be just the vegetation laying in the field after a crop is removed. And the factor is meant to address the fact that not all of the compost is mineralized and available to be used by the crop. And we've provided in the order, we've provided some values for what that factor should be. And growers are also free to come up with a calculation of their own value if they don't feel that the ones that we provided in there are applicable to their situation. And Monica, if you want to pipe in here with anything additional, feel free to do that.
Yeah, hi. There is the what we call the compost factor, which means that for the based the total nitrogen applied in the compost, in only 10% of that nitrogen applied, or only 5%, depending on the compost itself, will be considered to be available and therefore part of the calculation of the A minus R. So basically, you report the entire amount of nitrogen in the compost, but only 10% or 5% will be used in the calculation. And this is based on the amount of nitrogen that will be released from the compost during the first year. And this has been researched by a group of experts who provided these different amounts. And the difference between 10% or 5% is based on the carbon-nitrogen ratio of the compost material itself. So we can provide the actual paper and research, if you would like to see it, on how they established the 10% or 5%. But we basically just adopted the same information that was provided by the group of experts, really. Is that enough explanation, Jane? Okay.
Thank you.
Sorry, Jane. You were somehow muted again. So there's a couple things that both Monica and Diane said that I really want to draw your attention to, and that is, of course, there's the compost factor, which you're determining basically the amount of nitrogen that is mineralized, that is available either to the crops, or if not to the crops, then could be released into the environment. But remember then that as Monica said, you're only reporting that for the first year, which we're hoping is an incentive for then people to use compost, Jane, like organic growers, for example, that they only have to worry about that for the first year of mineralization. After that, then they don't have to like calculate and include that in their fertilizer applications later on in the year 2 and 3 and 4. It's just the first year. Okay, and now I see a hand raised for R. Hamlin. I'm going to unmute you, R. Hamlin.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, beautifully, thank you.
Yeah, I'm Russ from Grimway. Just had a question about the applied nitrogen minus the removed nitrogen and the desire to close that gap over time, which I think is great. My question relates to those lower limits in future years. And I think my concern is that the literature suggests that most plants have a fertilizer uptake efficiency of 50% or less. And so when you get to those lower numbers, like, 50 in future years, I'm just curious on what number is that based? And, you know, is it realistic to achieve that number given the fertilizer use efficiency of most plants?
So, yeah, thanks for the question. There's so much in this involved in this irrigation and nutrient management part of the order associated with these targets and limits. So I'm not surprised there's lots of questions about it. So with respect to that 50 in and of itself, that has come from trying to tailor what we know about the crops grown in our particular region and what information has been available through research, including the Harder report on nitrate in the Salinas and Central Valleys, or San Joaquin Valley, and what they determined was that there's an operational benchmark, they call it, of roughly 31 pounds per nitrogen per acre that will increase the nitrate concentration in groundwater to meet or exceed the maximum contaminant level. So with that in mind, and using our information associated with Central Coast specific information, we were able to calculate something less stringent than that for our discharge limit, and it came to 50. I mean, there's a lot of different steps associated with getting there. But Monica, perhaps if you want to elaborate on that, that would be great.
Yeah, hi. Diane explained the reason for the 50 number as the ultimate limit. And we recognize that it will be a challenge for some of the growers to achieve that number. That's why in the order we built enough time for when this number needs to be achieved, and we are ratcheting it down. We believe that the reasonableness is in the time associated with the different limits. And I want you also to recognize that it will take some advances or new technology, innovative techniques that we're hoping will be developed in the future for growers to be able to achieve these limits. That's why if you read the definition of the R, the removal number itself, in there we built other pieces of what we call removal, which could be either in the harvest remove or in the woody parts of the crops. Then we have treatment removal, and we added another one that is called other, and that is where we're hoping innovative techniques are developed to help growers achieve these limits. We recognize it's going to be a challenge, and again, that's why we build enough time to give the industry and the growers the opportunity and the ability to meet them.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hamlin. And now I see Jane, your hand is up, so I'm going to unmute your mic now.
Thank you so much, and I really appreciate this discussion. So one of you had listed the three components of nitrogen applications, a fertilizer, compost, and nitrogen included in irrigation water. I believe that soil nitrogen levels will also be required to be reported. Can you speak more on that point?
Sure, yes. That is another bit of information that we want reported in the nitrogen applied part of our reporting requirements. And it is something that has been required, you know, all along for ranches that are supposed to be reporting their total nitrogen applied. And the reason behind that is for growers to be able to have an opportunity to see what the nitrogen concentrations really are in the soil, so to help give a determination of, you know, is more fertilizer necessary or is it not, so that there isn't an over application. And I believe that that soil concentration of nitrogen is required to be measured once during the reporting period. So once in the year of in which the report is due.
I'd also like to add, Jane, that I'd also like to add, Jane, that of course it's not part of the applied. We're not counting it as part of the applied part of the applied nitrogen. So, if that was one of the reasons for your question, and I'm going to unmute you just in case you had a follow up.
Just clarifying what what these reporting requirements are.
Sure. Okay, great. Yeah. So as Diane said, you know, Sue, it's required to report the soil nitrogen, but again, it's not part of the applied nitrogen reporting in the A minus R calculation.
Right. So in the calculation that will be built into your report itself, that we will insert in there, that concentration doesn't come into play. It's more of an informational tool to help with the management practices on the ranch.
Great. Thank you, Diane. Any other questions from the participants? We have a few minutes left. If there are any last minute questions, Erin.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Thanks. I was wondering in terms of groundwater trend monitoring, if there are some water agencies who are doing that for their own purposes, is that data being incorporated into the information you receive, and can that at all offset the trend monitoring that would be required on individual ranches?
Yeah. Yeah, we totally support being able to use information from established monitoring, groundwater monitoring programs that already exist for a particular counties or agencies and that sort of thing. And we would hope that that can help inform, where there are data gaps, where you go beyond what that information can provide you in terms of a geographic area, or just other data gaps in terms of maybe constituents that you're interested in monitoring in. So we encourage people who are developing their trend monitoring plans to use that information that's already out there too.
Okay. Any other questions?
You know, I, if you don't mind, I'd like to go back to a question that Chris Beal asked earlier regarding, what if you're already, right off the top, what if you're already meeting that 50 pounds of nitrogen per acre limit? And I just wanted to refer you to page 28 of the order. And in there, it talks about this kind of situation. So if you are already achieving that 50 pounds of nitrogen per acre per year, then you would not be required to report your total nitrogen removed in your irrigation and nutrient management plan summary report. And this would a situation like this would be if you join a third party that certifies that you are meeting that discharge limit already. Another way to prove that you are doing that is to submit a technical report that the executive officer reviews and essentially approves. So this would be sort of an exemption from nitrogen removed reporting, but you would have to provide annual updates that you're still meeting that limit.
So if I can piggyback on that, I think what you're saying, Diane, is that under certain circumstances, a grower or a group of growers may be able to demonstrate that they're already meeting the 50 pounds per acre per year requirement, which is the final A minus R requirement that with a timeline of 2050. And in order to do that, what we envision is that there may be groups of growers who may form a third party, like a certification program. And in that case, we would expect that we'll probably see a proposal from them demonstrating that they could do that, and that they could also then confirm that indeed that discharge limit was being achieved through time. So it would require a proposal that would, of course, have to be vetted with staff and ultimately the executive officer. Great. Any other questions? The floor is free. Okay. Well, seeing none, then again, I want to thank everybody for participating, all the participants who hung in there, and this is new for us. It may be new for some of you as well. Doing a Zoom workshop. We'll be doing some more this week, and perhaps some more in the future as well. Again, thank you for joining us. Thank you for your questions. And we look forward to your comments. Remember, comments are due June 20th this month by 11:59, almost midnight. Get those comments in, and we look forward to receiving those comments. So without further ado then, unless I see somebody raise their hand, then we're gonna shut it down. And again, thank you for participating. Oh, one last question from Mr. Clausen. And I'm unmuting you now, Perry. Perry, you should be able to.
I see your deadline is on a Saturday. Sorry, I may have skipped what you explained on that. So that deadline is Saturday night.
Yeah. So obviously, the comments are being received through Ag on OI, which is an email. So yes, it is a Saturday, and it is at midnight. 11:59 on a Saturday. Yes.
Okay, thank you. Because typically those deadlines at Atlanta on weekends roll over to the first business day, but it sounds like you're going to stay with the 20th.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Okay, then. Well, again, thank you, everybody. I really appreciate your participation. And again, we look forward to hearing your comments, and we'll talk to you soon.